It's the Burt Cohen Show. The dream sometimes gets difficult for people. Sometimes people have good years. Sometimes people have bad years. Sometimes it's due to mistakes that people make. There's layoffs that can happen, the general economy. And people oftentimes, through no fault of their own, end up, believe it or not, out on the streets. It's completely shocking. It's a huge surprise to an awful lot of people. We're going to be talking about the problem of elderly women homeless in particular. We're waiting for a call from Rose Aguilar, who is the host of Your Call, a daily call-in radio show on KALW in San Francisco. She has written about homeless women. An article she wrote about that appears in the next edition of The Nation magazine. Aguilar is an op-ed contributor for Al Jazeera English and author of Red Highways, A Liberal's Journey into the Heartland. She has written for Alternet and Truth Out. Rose, you there?
Yes, hi.
Thank you so much. What prompted you to get out and conduct the research to write about the problem of homelessness among older women? How did you get inspired to do such a thing?
Well, about a year and a half ago, I was taking the bus home at about 2:30 in the morning, and I was sitting next to a woman who looked to be maybe in her 70s, and I was just wondering what she was doing on the bus so late. And I noticed she had some dirt under her fingernails. She was dressed really nicely, and so I sat next to her, and I just started talking to her, and I said, "Do you mind me asking you why you're on the bus so late?" And she said, "Well, I'm actually on my way to a 24-hour coffee shop because the owner lets me sleep in the booths all night." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, I'm homeless, and the shelters are all full, and I have nowhere to go, and so I go to this coffee shop." And I said, "How common is this?" And she said, "It's more common than you think." And so that just stuck with me for months, and I wanted to figure out how common that really was. So I started doing some research, and I didn't really know what I would find, because if any of your listeners have come to San Francisco as a tourist, they will be shocked by the homeless population. I mean, everyone I meet who comes to San Francisco says, "I had no idea there were so many homeless people here." I mean, you see homeless people on the streets. In fact, just the other night, I was going home, and in our Muni station at night, you see maybe two or three men sleeping on the ground. Well, a couple nights ago, I saw 12. I've never seen so many. But you don't see many women. The women tend to be invisible. The homeless women tend to be invisible. You mostly see men because the streets are far too dangerous for women. If you're a homeless woman, you're almost guaranteed to be assaulted.
Wow.
So that's what started this research.
And you've written about it for The Nation magazine, and of course I hope all our listeners read The Nation magazine online or in print. You know, and you point out in your article, it used to be that homeless women over 50 were blessedly rare. Now, apparently, it's become the norm. Tell us about this. What happened, and what is the context, and how, you know, when did this kind of change happen?
Well, I interviewed a woman, Marie O'Connor, who works at the St. Anthony Foundation, and they're this incredible organization. They offer lunches and dinners. I spent a lot of time at St. Anthony. People show up wearing no shoes, and they'll find you a pair of shoes. I mean, they really take such good care of people with absolutely no judgment. And she said that back in the 90s, if you saw an older homeless person on the streets, it was absolutely shocking. And today, like you said, it's the norm. You were also able back then to find homeless people decent housing. But housing in San Francisco is incredibly expensive. You're talking studios for $2,000 a month.
Studios.
This is a studio, one room.
Wow.
In fact, the Chronicle just had a story the other day about people renting tiny rooms or rooms off of a kitchen for $500 to $800 a month. It is so expensive to live here now because the tech sector is just booming again. And so what do you do when you're living on Social Security, which is about $900 a month? If you're lucky, you might get into a single-room occupancy. But a lot of the women I met said there's no privacy, they didn't feel safe there, there's a lot of mold, the place smells. In some cases, you might have holes in the ceiling, so the person living above you can see below, and there's no privacy. And they don't have kitchens, and so you end up spending a lot of your money on food. And a lot of the women I met said, I had maybe $10 left at the end of the month, and so they leave the SRO, and they end up sleeping in a shelter. But I'm glad you asked this question about how we got here, because you read a lot about, well, not a lot, but you read in the local papers about homelessness, and they rarely talk about the political decisions that really got us here. So there's a really good organization in San Francisco called WRAP, W-R-A-P, and they take a very close look at how we got here, and they point to things like cutbacks on Social Security, rising income inequality, attacks on unions, the privatization of public services. And also, in the 1970s, the Department of Housing and Urban Development's budget was slashed by 77% between 1978 and 1983. I mean, it is so difficult to find affordable housing, not only in San Francisco, but across the country. All of these factors are the result of really what we're seeing today. And I honestly, I mean, I spent 3 months on this. I don't think people know what's coming because we've got an aging baby boomer population. And here we are talking about austerity and going after Social Security and raising the retirement age. We're not even scratching the surface when it comes to how we are going to deal with this aging population that is barely making ends meet. I mean, what do we expect? People until their 80s to still work?
Right.
I mean, this is not sustainable. And I think this is going to hit us in the face in the coming years. Because, I mean, I'm already seeing it in San Francisco. The challenge is that the public isn't seeing it. It's almost like this underground world that I found over the course of my research.
Yeah, it's true. Certainly, I visited San Francisco, I don't know, a few years ago. It was a great city. And I was taken aback by the homeless problem.
Right.
And you talk about the general economy and what's going on there. And you're right, it's largely invisible. Here we have been going along the Dow Jones Industrial Averages seems to be going up. The Standard & Poor's is going up. La, la, la. Everything's going fine. And somehow, you know, there's that old phrase, a rising tide lifts all boats. It seems like there's an awful lot of dinghies out there that are not connected and have some leaks or something like that. And you point out that it's kind of invisible. And, you know, I'm part of the baby boom generation myself, and I know an awful lot of people my age who are suddenly finding themselves laid off.
Right.
There's competition going on here, and a rising tide is not lifting all boats. Isn't there a social safety net here?
Well, so you bring up a lot of points there, and I think it's really important to point out that as the politicians on both sides of the aisle talk about this so-called job recovery, they fail to point out that the majority of the jobs that are being created pay less than $13.50 an hour with no benefits. The future of jobs is in basically the service sector, and these sectors do not pay good wages.
No, not a living wage.
Not at all. I mean, no, you're talking about Walmart, Target, working in restaurants. You cannot make ends meet making $13 an hour in a city like San Francisco. Even in the middle of the country, it's extremely difficult. So you've got that, and that's what's happening. And then if you are laid off in your 50s, you're going to have a really hard time finding work because you're competing against college students who will take half of your salary. In fact, when I hung out at some of the shelters early in the morning, about 5 in the morning, because some of the shelters require you to stand in line by about 4 in the morning, okay? Imagine if you're a disabled woman trying to get across town. You're in one shelter. You have to go to a walk-in center to try to get a bed that night. And you'll find out if you get it by 7 a.m. So I got there at about 5 in the morning, and I saw a number of men who look like my history teachers in high school, right? They don't look sort of quote-unquote homeless.
Right.
So I walked up to them, and I said, can I ask you, you know, what are you doing here? What's your story? I met one guy who had a job managing a high-end restaurant in San Francisco, making about 60 grand a year. He got fired. They rehired a college student making half the salary with no benefits. And he said, I went through my savings, I overstayed my welcome at friends and family, and I am now in a shelter. And I said, what has this experience been like for you? And he said, you know what? I used to be one of those people who judged the homeless and the poor and said, oh, come on, pull yourself up by your bootstrap.
Right.
You live in the United States. Anybody can do anything with their lives. You can make anything of yourself.
Right.
He said, but now that I'm sleeping right next to them, I realize that we are in so much trouble. I met another guy who was wearing a very crisp black security jacket, and I said, what are you doing here? He said, well, I provide security at the big mall in downtown San Francisco, and I cannot find housing because it's so expensive, and I'm in debt, so I have to sleep in a shelter, and he works. I mean, that's the other thing. A lot of people who live in these shelters now work, but we're not seeing their faces in the media.
No, that's true. If you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. We're talking with Rose Aguilar, who is the host of Your Call, a daily call-in radio show on KALW in San Francisco. She's an op-ed contributor for Al Jazeera English, which I wish I got on my cable channel, I gotta tell you. And she's the author of Red Highways, A Liberal's Journey into the Heartland. We should talk about that sometime. She's written for Alternate and Truth Out. We're talking about the problem of homelessness among elderly people and older women in particular. And you know, as you were talking, I was thinking of that term, the working poor. It used to be the case. I mean, I was brought up in the 50s. Yes, I'm that old. That, you know, it was considered that if you worked hard, were honest, a decent participating citizen, you'd be okay. You'd make out okay. It's, you know, the work ethic here that, you know, again, a rising tide lifts all boats. And we have seen, it seems like in many ways, the recession is kind of behind us. How is it that even in a pretty liberal town like San Francisco, at least it's got that reputation, how is this happening that so many people are falling through the cracks?
It's so expensive to live here. A lot of families are being pushed out. A lot of blacks are being pushed out of this town. Like I said, you're talking $2,000 a month for a studio apartment.
Yeah, amazing.
It's really hard to pay that if you're working in the service sector. I mean, even our minimum wage is one of the highest in the country. It's around, I think it's about $10.50, maybe more an hour.
Wow.
But you still cannot make ends meet off of that. So we have an aging population in San Francisco. We've got 155,000 seniors. This is according to the city's Department of Aging and Adult Services. Roughly 19,000 live below the federal poverty line. We're talking about $10,000 for a single person, 65 or older, $13,000 for a two-person household. There's no possible way to make ends meet on that.
No.
And so what's happening right now in San Francisco is Twitter just opened an office here. Facebook down in Silicon Valley recently went public. You've got a lot of venture capital money flowing into the tech sector. So a lot of people from Silicon Valley, frankly, got bored living down there, and now they're moving to San Francisco to play. And a lot of neighborhoods are becoming gentrified. There's a lot of upscale restaurants, a lot of upscale bars. And they're pushing out the poor. But a lot of people can't be pushed out because, again, if you're an older person, where do you go? That's the question. And I think our society, we really need to answer this question. What are we going to do with this aging population, especially people who've got disabilities? Because I think it's really important to point out that the women that I interviewed were the women that were able to sit down with me for hours at a time and have a conversation. I could not interview the people with mental illnesses because within about 5 or 10 minutes of the interview, they either yelled at me or they changed their story, or they just didn't make sense. I mean, this is a huge population, but I wasn't able to really get their story. because I couldn't get it. So I was only able to get a story from women who told their stories in detail and in depth. So you have people like Zulema, for example. She's a 65-year-old who worked in the fashion industry in Europe for 20 years, Paris, London, wow. Milan. And she had a bad divorce, had a falling out with her family, moved to the United States, found God, bought an RV. She was basically going to spread the word of God in an RV around the country. And she gave a lot of her money to the church.
Mm.
And someone stole her RV. And now she has been sleeping in a shelter in San Francisco where women sleep in chairs. I want to repeat this, because when I first walked into the shelter, I was shocked that in one of the most expensive cities in the country, women are actually sleeping in plastic chairs. Now, since I started doing the reporting, the city has quietly replaced the plastic with cushion, but women are still sleeping. So I walked into this, it's a walk-in shelter, but a lot of women actually live there because they don't like the shelters. They don't feel safe in the shelters.
Mm.
And so I walked in, and try to picture this. Women were in chairs with their heads kind of drooped over, and that's how they sleep.
And that, of course, would cause medical problems.
Oh, huge. Gout. I mean, think about when you fly for 8 hours,
yeah,
how
you
your body hurts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine sleeping like that for years at a time?
Oh, my. Well, as I said, in San Francisco, which is, it's got the reputation, I mean, Nancy Pelosi represents that area, does she not? And it has a reputation as being a liberal bastion. I mean, you ask people in the heartland of the country, as I'm sure you have, what they think of San Francisco. How is it that this large and growing population, finds themselves in such dire straits? Where is the the governmental commitment to these citizens? Do they just pretend they don't exist?
Well, when I spoke to a number of homeless advocates, they would say things like, no one talks about the plastic chairs. This is the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And we conduct all of these studies. We have these consultants walk in these shelters and put together these elaborate, expensive reports, and not much changes. I mean, you'll hear this across the country, because when I spoke to groups in D.C., they said the same thing. I mean, I'm living in a city in San Francisco with 27,000 people on the public housing list. I mean, we're dealing with a crisis here. There is not enough affordable housing for people to live in the city. I frankly fear that over the next couple of years, if this tech boom continues,
right,
people are going to be pushed out of the city in droves. I've got a lot of friends who are artists and musicians who can't afford to live here, and they're moving to Oakland. We saw this in the mid to late 90s, and we're seeing it again, but I feel like it's a little worse this time because the rents back then were not as high. The other thing that's happening is I met a lot of people from other states in the shelters. So they're being told in places like Oregon and Washington to go to San Francisco.
Oh, my.
Because the climate is decent. It doesn't snow here. I mean, the coldest it gets is, 40-ish, 45. And you will not starve here. I mean, if you're homeless, you will definitely have access to meals. There are a lot of amazing organizations providing food, providing socks, providing clothing. The housing is the problem. There's not enough housing.
So if people are homeless, just go to San Francisco. They'll be taken care of. Not to worry.
Well, you might end up in a shelter with plastic chairs, and you might have to sleep in a chair.
Why is homelessness so much tougher on older women than older men? And I wonder about the issue, frankly, of pride.
Mm. Yeah, that's a big one. A lot of women have been caregivers, right? Women are caregivers. And a lot of them don't want to ask for help.
Right.
I found this over and over again. I saw a lot of women, very nicely dressed, who came into St. Anthony for lunch, and they sit in the women's only section. They did not want to talk to me. And when I talked to the advocates, they said there's way too much pride.
Yeah.
For a lot of these women, their families don't know they're homeless. They might have children, and they don't know they're homeless. They don't know that they're going to a place like St. Anthony's for a free lunch and a free dinner. They have no idea. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to admit it. So you're right. There's a lot of pride. And again, the streets are unsafe for women. In fact, even the women that double up with men might find themselves attacked. And then the other thing that happens is, you know, you age, you have ailments, your body starts to hurt. I mean, I think about my own mom, who's in her early 60s. You know, she doesn't have the body she had when she was in her late 40s or early 50s. Things just start to break down. And then when you're homeless, it takes an even, oh my gosh, you can't even imagine. I mean, when I spent 3 hours in one of these shelters, I had to decompress for an hour because you've got 10 different conversations going on at one time. A lot of them make no sense. A lot of women will start screaming for no reason.
Right.
They'll start fighting. Their clothing will fall out of their bags. I mean, it's just, for lack of a better term, it's utter chaos.
And what can the city do? I mean, just the city. I mean, there's like at least three different levels of government. There's a city government,
right,
the state government, and the federal government. Is the city attempting to address this? I mean, they must know that the reputation of San Francisco is growing, that, yeah, there's a lot of homeless people there.
Right. Well, I spoke to a few government officials, and they said that, you know, obviously we can't find enough affordable housing. They said, well, we'll talk to these women individually. I'm willing to talk with women to find out what's happening with their cases and contact their case managers about finding them permanent housing. But that's really all they said. And they also acknowledged, we know that the system is not perfect, where you've got women and men who have to stand in line at 4 in the morning, and they don't know if they'll get a bed that night, and they're moving from shelter to shelter to shelter.
Mm.
I mean, a lot of the women that I met who don't really have anywhere to go all day, because sometimes you can't go into a shelter until 5 p.m., they ride public transportation all day. You know, or you go to the public library, you'll see homeless people everywhere. They're in the bathrooms washing themselves, trying to get clean. They're watching movies during the day. Or, you know, they'll take BART and fall asleep and end up in Fremont, which is, I think, 30 or 45 minutes away. And so this is what they're doing with their days. Now, what advocates will tell you is we need to start with incremental changes.
What do they mean?
So basically, why are we forcing people to stand in line at 4 in the morning to get a bed?
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a better way to do this. You can do it online. You can do it maybe by calling. There are other ways to do it. The other thing that I heard from women is if you live in an SRO.
And what is an SRO?
Oh, it's a single room occupancy.
Oh, yes.
So it's kind of like an old hotel where you just live in a room.
Okay.
And you might have a stove, but there's really very few options for
minimal
cooking.
Right, right.
And they're in horrific conditions. They say, why are we in an SRO with men? Why are we on the same floor with someone with a mental illness?
Mm.
There should be nurses on these floors helping these people, because maybe I'm trying to find a job, but it's really hard to get a good night's sleep when you're on a floor with, you know, people who are screaming in the middle of the night, frankly.
Yeah, and what about getting jobs? I mean, we know that oftentimes, for better or for worse, how you look, how you present yourself does factor in getting a job. But if people, you know, are in a place, as you were just describing, and don't have the ability to neaten up and to wear nice clothes, that doesn't exactly help. And what about, you know, you talked about Silicon Valley and Facebook and Twitter coming there. Are there not jobs at the lower level there, or are they all high-level jobs? What options are there for these people in terms of, you know, work experience?
So there's a couple things. If you've got a massive disability and you can't work,
right,
what options do you have? But
None.
If you can work, I mean, Twitter actually came to San Francisco tax-free. Progressive San Francisco Board of Supervisors voted to give them a break on their taxes because they said, if you don't give us this tax break, we're going to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got kind of a relationship where they've got to give back to the community.
Right.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. I mean, I know that I've met some people who work at Twitter, and they say, well, we are doing some volunteering. And I said, well, that's all well and good, but volunteering is not sustainable. I mean, this is proven, because a lot of these nonprofits in California have seen their budgets slashed. In fact, social service organizations have seen $3 billion in cuts over the past couple of years.
$3 billion?
Yeah, we've seen massive, massive cuts in California.
And that's true. We have our, used to be liberal anyway, Jerry Brown is governor yet again. And the state's economy, the state budget, from what I hear, is in, you know, really a shambles. And so that's the place they look in you know, the most vulnerable people to make cuts there?
Well, we've seen cuts across the board. We've seen massive tuition hikes, but we've seen cuts to in-home supportive services. And this is the service where if you're disabled, someone will come in to help you take a bath, help you go to the bathroom, help you cook.
Right.
Massive cuts there. You name it, it's been cut. I mean, a lot of programs in California have seen their budgets completely slashed. We've got a tax problem in California in terms of not only taxing corporations, but also our education system took a massive hit because of Prop 13, which capped property taxes, not only for individuals, but also for commercial property. And that hasn't changed since the late 70s.
And we may be talking about San Francisco, but we're also talking really about the entire 50 states. There's the problems are going up in the same. Name me a state that doesn't have a budget problem.
I
don't know. And generally, you know, the political pressure is to not cut where the lobbyists can make a big difference. But generally, the homeless don't have a strong lobby in the state house.
No, exactly. The poor don't have a strong lobby. Children don't have a strong lobby. The unemployed, frankly, don't have a strong lobby.
Right.
Remember when we were hearing about the 99ers?
Yes,
for a long time. Where are they now? I mean, they're still. I just did a radio show about 2 weeks ago about unemployment in the Bay Area. Okay, this is San Francisco, home of Silicon Valley, and a lot of money. There is so much money in this town.
Right.
We were flooded with phone calls from people who have MBAs, various degrees, who cannot find jobs. People called in and said, I'm so embarrassed, I'm walking dogs. I'm, you know, taking anything that I can. I cannot find work. And a lot of people are over 50 and said, frankly, I think it's age discrimination because I cannot get an interview. But then again, I've got girlfriends in their late 30s, early 40s, who've been searching for jobs for years. They cannot find anything.
Wow. We are talking on the Burt Cohen Show with Rose Aguilar about the problem of homeless women, elderly homeless, growing specifically in San Francisco, but generally across the nation. And I wonder about, you know, the housing bubble in general, how that affected things. And I know that, you know, in the last Great Depression in the 1930s, an awful lot of people who suddenly fell on hard times, good, you know, hardworking, honest people, got evicted from their homes.
Right.
And sometimes back then there would be, sort of political gangs, actually, who would take their furniture and fight the police and put it back in there, and, you know, ongoing struggles. How much of a problem is this that, you know, companies have a hard time, they lay people off, and people can't afford these incredible rents and they get evicted? Is that a substantial part of that in San Francisco?
Not in San Francisco, because the rents are going through the roof. Homes are selling for, in my neighborhood, a fixer-upper is about $700,000. And we're talking maybe a two-bedroom if you're lucky.
Wow.
Yeah. No, San Francisco's real estate is off the charts. It's in this area is doing very, very well.
Yeah, but people suddenly can't afford it. They may have had a good job, but they may have overextended themselves. That must be part of the problem anyway.
Well, we're seeing a massive gap between the rich and the rest of us in San Francisco, because I'm hearing of people paying cash for a lot of these homes.
Whoa.
And even when you're talking $2,000 or $3,000 in rent, people are outbidding and saying, I'll give you more, or I'll write you a $20,000 check right now if you give the place to me. Because remember, we had a lot of IPOs in Silicon Valley. We've got a lot of very wealthy people in this area.
Right.
It's just a small percentage, just like when you look at the overall population, the 1% and the 99%.
Right.
So that's the Bay Area. But when you go out into the suburbs in California, there is a major foreclosure crisis. And the majority of the people that got hit are blacks and Latinos, because there was a concerted effort to really go into these neighborhoods and offer these people ridiculous loans that these loan officers knew they couldn't afford. I mean, we heard stories about this. They gave them AAA ratings, even though they were making $50,000 a year, and they lied and said they were making $100,000 a year. And we still haven't, no one has been held accountable for any of this.
I know. I think that's it's shocking, almost beyond words, that part of what created the crisis for the whole country is that these big banks lent money just absolutely willy-nilly. They could have learned from the early 90s when a similar thing happened, but they didn't. How much of the problem that you're seeing, the actual elderly people out on the streets, may be related to what the big banks did and the fact that they're not paying any price for it at all?
Right. Well, so every person has a story. That's what I realized when I started talking to so many women. You've got stories of women who were taking care of their parents, and their parents passed away. Mm-hmm. The siblings were all supposed to share the money from the sale of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marcia, one woman that I interviewed, 56-year-old woman, she had a stroke. Her sister took the money and left the state and just left her high and dry. I mean, it's hard for some of us to believe this happens, but it's common, where there are major problems within the family, and they leave their sibling high and dry. So then Marcia got hit by a car, and she reached out for help to other family members and friends, and no one responded. And Marcia was one of the women that was living in one of these single-room occupancies and was tired of being so poor. So she left, and the last time I saw her, it's been a while, I actually cannot find her. I'm trying to find her.
Mm.
But she was in... She basically goes from the plastic chair shelter to shelters with beds and back again. I mean, she really has no idea where she's going to be from one night to the next. And she's hoping, and I think maybe she's in Reno, because in Reno, Nevada, it's much cheaper. And so a lot of people are going there to try to find housing.
Mm.
Every single person has a very
right.
different story.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, and that's what's so amazing about it. And again, I really couldn't get the stories from people with mental illnesses
sure.
because
yeah.
it was too hard to have a conversation.
So could it be said that you can't really profile, say, this is the average homeless elderly woman?
No, I think you can't. And I think a lot of reporters try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they do, they'll grab onto a story, they'll follow someone for a month, and then maybe she gets housing, and they'll say, oh, this is so great. It ends on a positive note. But they tend to... They don't talk about how we got here. And I think context is really important when we're talking about anything about the economy, because there are political decisions and legislation, and there are reasons why we got here. It didn't just happen, right? There's been 40 years of attacks on unions, globalization, tax cuts. I mean, Go down the line. There are reasons why we got here. It didn't just happen. And it's going to take us, sadly, a long time to get out of it. Honestly, I don't really think people realize what we're facing.
Yeah, I think you're right, because it's been largely invisible. And the people who, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And these people are, they're shoved off in a corner so nobody sees them or hears from them. One woman that you spoke with, I thought this was very interesting. She said, "Not a damn thing has changed since 1931.
Mm.
It never will."
Right.
Why would she say that? And maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, so when I learned about the shelter where women are sleeping in chairs, I was told, don't go in as a journalist, because they might not let you in, or they might make it look really nice. And so I just walked in, trying to kind of look inconspicuous, and I sat in a chair for about 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up talking to certain people. One woman walked up to me and tried to sell me a pair of jeans. Another woman asked me what I was doing there. And I was honest. And I said, well, I'm writing a story about older homeless women, and this is invisible. And it's wrong, frankly. And a woman who clearly has been there for I don't know how long, because she had an old suitcase. The zippers were ripped. She had blankets over the suitcase, and then she put her legs over that. So she had her space in this place. And she started yelling at me, and she said, I was a member of the military. They don't give a damn about you when you're out. You're wasting your time. Who are you talking to? And I said, anyone who will talk. And she said, they're lying to you. You are wasting your time. Nothing has changed, and nothing will change.
What do you think about that? Has it changed? I mean, back then in 1931, that she referred to, there was no safety net whatsoever. There was no Social Security. There was nothing. Isn't it a heck of a lot better now? Or what kind of comparison would you make? Obviously, you weren't there in the 30s, but we've certainly read about it.
Well, I don't know about the 30s, but even in the early 90s, I mean, a lot of the advocates that I met said, we could find housing for these people in the early 90s. You cannot find housing for these people now. It's actually getting worse.
Oh. Well, why is the housing not being found? Is it just, I mean, private, you can't always depend on the kindness of strangers, you know, so it seems. And there are people certainly in the old Confederacy who really believe that you can just rely on churches. The churches are the center of the communities there, and they may well be. But can there be long-term solutions? And of course, there can be short-term ways to address this from private charitable contributions that, you know, are oftentimes window dressing, as we all know,
right,
for the corporations. But, you know, what about the role of churches and you know, charitable actions by corporate entities?
Well, there's one church actually in the Tenderloin. And this is an area where there are a lot of homeless people in San Francisco, and they open their doors during the day so people have a place to sleep. And so people are sleeping in pews during the middle of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what we're dealing with. But they don't have the resources. I mean, this is all a Band-Aid. They'll offer a meal. There's a group in the Mission District that has ladies' night on Thursday nights. Homeless women can go there just to escape the madness of homelessness. And they can have a hot meal, maybe get a massage. They can find a new outfit, turn up music, dance, just be a woman, frankly, for 2 hours a week and escape it all. And but again, these organizations are struggling. I mean, the people who work there are either volunteers or they barely are making ends meet.
Right.
So I think we really need to have a very honest conversation about what we're facing, because there are solutions, but it's going to take a while to get there. I mean, we really need to say, what kind of society do we want to live in? I mean, we always hear things like, you know, we've got to compete with other countries.
Right.
They're talking about competing with China, where people are making slave wages. And because the people of China are saying, wait a minute, we want to be treated with respect, the multinationals now want to go to Vietnam. I mean, it's like a race to the bottom.
It is a race to the bottom, no question about that. And try to compete with that. I mean, that's exactly what President Romney would have pushed.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, but, you know, even under Obama, we have these backdoor trade deals that are happening, and we don't have access to this information. I just wonder, you know, what is it going to take to get people to say, this is not acceptable to be in a country with so much wealth and women are sleeping in chairs?
Well,
these are really tough questions we have to ask, because what are we going to do with these people? Throw them out on the street? Put them in chairs? I mean, we have to ask these questions because, again, the baby boomer population is aging.
Yes.
And their 401ks, if they have one, have been sliced in half.
Right.
A lot of people do not have a cushion. And maybe that cushion they might use up all of their savings at 65, and then what do they do? Or even 75, and then what do they do?
Right. People are living a lot longer than they used to,
They're living longer. And in fact, my article in The Nation, I've been reading the comments, and people say, this is me. I'm on the edge.
Wow.
I am on the verge of becoming homeless. And, yeah, it's a little overwhelming. And, I don't want to just be completely negative about it, but this is just the tip of the iceberg.
And, you know, it's one thing to depend on, as I say, the kindness of strangers, you know, to be altruistic, to be nice, and people do it out of the goodness of their hearts. But that doesn't motivate policy change in government.
Exactly.
What motivates policy change in government is when it really affects the entire economy. And I have a feeling, Rose, that this is going to be something that can't be ignored relatively soon. In fact, I read here where we're coming from. This interview is based in New Hampshire. That a recent study showed on the coast of New Hampshire that the number of unsheltered homeless rose 150% from just 2010 to 2012.
Wow, yeah. You're seeing this across the country. I mean, if you just go to Google News and type in poverty and homelessness, you will find really good reporting at the local level, not so much at the national level. You might get a segment on 60 Minutes once in a while, mm-hmm. but the other outlets just fail to follow it. The New York Times might have a really good piece about poverty and homelessness, but it's really sad that the national media isn't doing its job on this issue. And frankly, I mean, the politicians have just completely dropped the ball. President Obama mentioned poverty in his inauguration, in his inaugural address. But I think he mentioned that word more than he's mentioned it in the last 4 years. I mean, they don't talk about these issues. And frankly, I think the liberals and progressives have dropped the ball on this. Yeah. Because we have a Democrat in office. I mean, under Bush, I think these issues would have gotten more attention.
That's a very good point. And liberals, people on the left, have let Obama get away with a lot of things that had it been George W. Bush, they would have been up in arms about.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the poverty rate under Obama has skyrocketed. The number of children living in poverty has skyrocketed.
Hmm.
Like you said, the number of people living in shelters. In fact, I'm going next weekend to Los Angeles because there's an amazing woman, Diane Nealon, who's been traveling on the back roads of this country in an RV for the last 6 years, interviewing homeless children and families. And she said what she finds is absolutely shocking. She was in Florida by Disney World, and there's this road of motels
mm-hmm.
where families are living.
Yeah.
And 60 Minutes actually did a piece on this. They did a piece on homeless children.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed a lot of these families who are living in motels. They had a lot of children in a room, maybe about 30 or 40, and they said, how many of you went to bed hungry last night? And over half of them raised their hands.
Right.
You know, why? It just gets me that this isn't getting attention because there are solutions. I mean, it's going to take a lot of work. We need things like public works programs that actually pay well. Our infrastructure is in shambles. Our bridges are in shambles.
I know.
Right? This is an easy solution. We need to upgrade our water system. Our pipes are so outdated. This is an easy solution that puts a lot of people to work, and it actually pays really well.
You couldn't see me raise my arms to the heavens when you mentioned that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy. I mean, the thing that gets me is it's not rocket science. We know what we need to do. We just don't have the political will. And here we have, okay, the next couple of months, be ready. They're going after Social Security. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
They went after it under Clinton, but they couldn't do it because of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. I mean, they were about to go through with this. Make no doubt. They're definitely going to do this, and they want to raise the retirement age.
That's the worst possible thing you can do. They should be lowering the retirement age.
Oh, exactly. And they should be raising the cap on Social Security.
For sure.
I think what we need to do is we have to spend more time talking about solutions. Because there are a lot of things that could be done. And, I mean, we just spent the last 45 minutes. I'm glad we spent the last 45 minutes talking about this because it's not really getting much attention.
No, it's not.
Talking about the homeless population, especially older women.
We don't want to see it. We just don't want to see it.
A lot of people don't want to see it.
No,
but we have to talk about solutions. We have to talk about why, at a time when we are endlessly debating Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, and waste. Where is the conversation about military waste?
Yeah, really?
Because I don't know if your listeners know this. It didn't get much attention. But President Obama just signed another $633 billion military spending bill. And guess what the vote was in the Senate on this spending bill?
What?
98-0. When do you ever have that kind of vote? 98-0, hardly any debate about how this money is being spent.
And President Eisenhower warned us about this, as we all know, and it's gotten infinitely worse than that wise man could have possibly imagined. You're right. Nobody talks about that. And I got to tell you, in terms of public works jobs, absolutely right. There's a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done on our infrastructure.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a tremendous number of people who need jobs.
Right.
You know, and when I talk to Republicans, you know, not the real right-wing Republicans, but the traditional conservative Republicans about the idea of public works jobs, a new deal, people are for it.
Oh, yeah.
The support is there, but I don't see any politician at all, obviously, by that vote 98-0. Nobody's got the cojones to even mention it.
Right. Well, and you also look at the polling on raising taxes on the wealthy. It's over 70%.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody made a big deal out of the so-called fiscal cliff deal.
Right.
Well, what if the taxes took us back to what, Clinton era rates? And 88% of the Bush tax cuts are now permanent? I mean, this hardly got any attention in the alternative media. 88% of the Bush tax cuts are now permanent.
And, you know, if you look at Western history, there's oligarchies, there's plutocracies, you know, where you have government of, by, and for the very rich. And then you have something called a republic of the people. It's really changing that. You know, we've had this incredible military empire where the military and the corporate interests have been calling all the shots. I think there is, people don't agree with that, but I think people feel powerless to do anything about it, powerless to say anything about it, although there is broad agreement that these things can be done. But say, all right, say there were public works jobs. I wonder how that would affect specifically getting back to our homeless, the elderly homeless. Say there was, you know, Franklin Roosevelt was back in power and we had a big new deal, you know, building roads and bridges. How would that help the elderly homeless?
Well, would that help the elderly? I mean, it. I don't know if there's a direct connection between that, but at least you would get people back to work. It would add to the tax base.
Yes.
And perhaps people would feel a little more empowered to demand more from their governments to actually take care of these people. Because when you're struggling and you can't make ends meet, the last thing you're going to do is get out onto the streets or get active. Because it's really hard to do all of these. And if you're taking care of children.
That's right? True.
It's really hard. So if you're, at least you've got pride, you're bringing home a paycheck, you feel good about what you're doing, you can feed your family, you could send your child to school.
And certainly, you know, they wouldn't be laying down railroad ties and doing heavy lifting like that, but there's other work that can be done. I mean, there's desk work, there's various different jobs within, you know, creating a new electric infrastructure that we need so
bad. Yeah, also, I mean, having a job that you actually enjoy. I mean, we're at a point where people are taking jobs that they just don't like.
Oh,
I mean, I've been doing a lot about the Walmart protest, and I remember interviewing a woman who said, you know, I have to tell you, I want a living wage, but even more than that, I'd like to at least be recognized and told that I'm doing a decent job.
Mm.
And it just gave me chills because she said, we are never thanked for any of the work that we do here. I mean, this woman is in her late 50s and she's a cashier at Walmart.
Right.
Right.
And I see more and more people who, you know, I have the feeling, you know, working at Walmart or Target or a bunch of other places that probably had decent paying jobs, but now are forced to go back to work for these menial things that they, you know, I wonder how often a lot of these people blame themselves. You know, a lot of the
well, where does that come from? That comes from all of the buzzwords we hear in this country.
Such as?
Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Mm-hmm. If you work hard enough, you can make it, as if we're not already working hard. We work more than most industrialized countries, and
true,
our wages are so low. I mean, I think what's really interesting, I think under Bush, 8 years of Bush, our expectations have really reached new lows. We just don't expect much in this country. I mean, I was on vacation recently over the holidays, and I met so many Europeans who said, why are you putting up with this? And I said, what do you mean? And they said, you spend so much on health care. You spend so much on education. You spend more than all countries combined on the military.
Yeah.
And what are you getting back from it? Why are you putting up with this? I mean, I met a guy in Norway who went to law school for free. In a lot of these countries in Denmark and Switzerland, they don't really have a homeless population. They're paying much more in taxes than we are, sometimes 54%.
Right.
And I said, how do you feel about that? And they said, well, I don't really mind because we've got a really great infrastructure. We have a very good healthcare system. People go to school for free. And we believe that everybody deserves an opportunity. And it kind of blew me away because I thought, wow, our expectations in this country are so low. Simply because we have a president who can make a good speech and knows how to talk, people are thrilled. Right?
Yeah.
And I said, but wait a minute. What happened to our expectations in this country? I mean, my father was a unionized sheet metal worker, and he told me that he recently went to an accountant who said, "You have an amazing pension. What did you do for a living?" He said, "I was a sheet metal worker." And the accountant was blown away. He said, "I have never seen a pension like this, and I'll never see one like this again. And I cannot believe that you are a sheet metal worker." I mean, my dad did not go to college. He didn't go to community college. He went to trade school. You cannot do that today.
And where does that get us? Where does it, does that make us a stronger economy? I don't think so.
Not at all. We need, in fact, I'm about to go on the air in about 8 minutes.
Okay.
And we're having a conversation today with a woman who wrote a book. I'm just grabbing this book out of my bag. It's called Don't Buy It, The Trouble with Talking Nonsense About the Economy, Anat Shankar Osorio. She said the main problem is that progressives do not know how to talk about the economy. They grab conservative language. After the 2008 crisis, this was a perfect opportunity for progressives to change the entire conversation, to question capitalism,
right,
to question all of these issues, to question trade, and they failed miserably because they grasped onto graphs, they talked about it in 10-minute sound bites. You can't reach average people by talking about it in long sound bites. And most people no idea. They're not even affected by the S&P 500. They don't know how inflation works. They don't own stock. And that's what we hear every day. So we drastically have to change the conversation in order for things to change and in order for these homeless women to basically have a bed and some health care and not be forced to sleep in a chair in the most expensive city in the country. Well, one of them, New York City, is probably still more expensive than San Francisco, but we're almost there.
Well, and it's going that way across the country. And I do note that Iceland, I believe, had a big financial crisis. And what they did was to prosecute the big bank owners and to help everybody else instead.
Yep.
And it worked.
When we had the savings and loan crisis,
yes,
a lot of people went to jail. But because we have a revolving door and the CEO of Goldman Sachs can be our Treasury Secretary, it's highly unlikely that they're going to crack down.
Well, what can people do, do you think, here? I know you got to go in just a few minutes, but
Honestly, you know what? Speak out about these issues. Share these stories. I think you can have a much greater effect at the local level than the national level.
Sure, yes.
Those people are just, they'll take your email. I don't know what they do with it, frankly. At the local level, you can really raise hell. Go to the meetings. Speak out. But honestly, I just use your voice. I mean, talk about these issues. I think we need major changes in this country. The other thing you can do, talk about solutions.
Yes.
Because I'm guilty of this. It's very easy to talk about the problems we're facing, but give people a solution to say, wait a minute, why don't we have a public works program?
Right.
We've got potholes. Our bridges are falling apart. Why aren't we demanding a decent infrastructure in this country and clean water and clean air? Because the majority are on our side.
Absolutely.
It's just the minority with the extreme voices have the microphone.
So it seems. And as Bob Dylan once said, money doesn't talk, it swears.
That's right. And demand more from your media, really. If you hear something you don't like, write a letter, email, call.
And it does matter, and I'll tell you.
It really does matter. It really does. I get emails back on a regular basis, and I write reporters constantly and say, wait a minute, why did you just quote this person? Why didn't you go out on the streets and interview, the woman who's suffering? Why did you just do the report? Or why are you acting like this issue is 50-50?
Right.
The polling shows it's not.
Right, right.
So,
And we do have to deal with that issue of, when Romney said the 47% are, feel like they're entitled and the takers. That's a big attitude we have to deal with.
Exactly. And you know what? Maybe we should do another show about solutions because I really think
that's
really important.
It is. Well, Rose Aguilar has to go and do her show, Your Call, on KALW out in super rich San Francisco. I hope you get paid well and you get health benefits. But I know the business, and it's not always that great.
Oh, no, it's not. I mean, support independent media because where would we be without independent media, right?
That's true. That's true. We can't just depend on the corporate voices for us. We need to have the people speaking. Rose Aguilar, thank you so much. Very interesting program today.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for really caring about this issue. I really appreciate it.
Well, I care about the economy. You know, it's not just out of the goodness of our hearts. It's we need it. We got to deal with it.
We should all be outraged that women are sleeping in chairs. It just should not be acceptable.
And of course, we didn't mention if they're out on the streets, the chances are that they're going to get assaulted too. So we
exactly.
deal with that.
Yeah.
I got to let you go. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
And people being out on the streets, it happened in the 1930s. And Woody Guthrie sang about this a very, very long time ago. What he says is applicable today.
I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round. Just a wandering worker, I go from town to town. And the police make it hard wherever I may go. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. My brothers and my sisters are stranded on this road, a hot and dusty road that a million feet have trod. Rich man took my home and drove me from my door, and I ain't got no home in this world anymore. Was a farming on the shares, and always I was poor. My crops I lay into the banker's store. My wife took down and died up on the cabin floor, and I ain't got no home in this world anymore. Now as I look around, it's mighty plain to see, this world is such a great and a funny place to be. All the gambling man is rich and the working man is poor, and I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand. And every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Where my thoughts are escaping home, where my music's playing home, where my love lies waiting silently for me. Every day's an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines. And each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories. And every stranger's face I see reminds me that I long to be homeward bound. I wish I was homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts are escaping home, where my music's playing home, where my love lies waiting silently for me. Tonight I'll sing my songs again, I'll play the game and pretend. But all my words come back to me in shades of mediocrity, like emptiness in harmony. I need someone to comfort me. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts are escaping. Home, where my music's playing. Home, where my love lies